Hello, everyone. I'm Marcy Howard, and for the next hour, we're going to have a discussion about faith. The mission of About Faith is to gain peace and understanding with one another through answering questions about a variety of faiths. We are not here to debate or decide what's right or wrong. We're here to gain knowledge and understanding of one another through respectful conversations with faith leaders about their own journey in faith. And I am so excited today to introduce Father Jason from the Holy Nativity Lord Mission. Father Jason, welcome.
Thanks for having me again, Marcy. It's good to be with you all.
And I would like to welcome Ashish Modi from the Hindu Culture and Temple of Shreveport. And so welcome, Ashish.
Nice to be here.
And we have an old friend who came back to visit today, and that is Pastor Andy Liu. And he is from the Mission Church at First Baptist, the Chinese Mission Church at First Baptist. Welcome, Pastor Andy.
Thank you. Glad to come back to meet you all again.
I'm kind of excited about today. The last show that we did was about women of faith and mothers of faith. It was on Mother's Day. And today we're going to talk about the men in your journey of faith. Men that has either been written about, was a main person in your life and how you lead your life. I just would like to have a conversation about those people, those men that were in your faith and recorded in your faith. And I was wondering, Ashish, would you like to go first?
Sure, that's my pleasure. Today, I want to talk about a few remarkable men who were instrumental in the revival of Hindu philosophy in last century. There was a basic decline in understanding of basic Hindu principles and Hindu philosophy. And many people had thought that the case was really hopeless and the truth was lost once and forever. And now you may ask why there was a decline in the Hinduism is one of the ancient religion for thousands of years. Why was the decline? Well, there are many, many reasons there was a decline. Number one is old superstitions and meaningless rituals and ceremonies were crumbling away the pure essence of Hindu philosophy. Second was India was ruled before by Muslim emperors for hundreds of years and after Britishers came over. So basically there was people were not, they were frustrated and they were focusing more on rituals and ceremonies rather than focusing on what the fundamental truths were. And obviously there were some caste of Hindu people, they were taking advantage with focus on rituals and ceremonies rather than understanding or trying to spread the understanding of actual philosophy. But these remarkable men, they turned the tide with their simple yet very effective explanation of Vedanta principles to the masses. And one such man I want to talk about is Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa. He was born in a Brahmin family, in a very poor family in Bengal in 1833. He was not an educated man. He did not even understand the ancient Sanskrit language, but his knowledge of Vedanta, Upanishad, Gita, and various epics of Hindu philosophy was tremendous. And he made those complex concepts very easy to understand and grasp by normal people who were also not as educated. He made spirituality a goal of his life. Now, another amazing thing about Sri Ramakrishna was that he worshiped with Muslims, Christians, Buddhists, and lower caste people. And he had a very simple approach to religious tolerance and mutual respect for all the religions and all the people. he would tell his followers, even though he worshipped Mata Kali, he would tell his followers that creeds and sects matter nothing. Let everyone perform with the faith of their choice, because faith is the only clue to get to the God. All his life, he emphasized that God realization is the highest goal of his life. He preached, and this is very important, he preached oneness of existence and harmony of all religions. He found a way to reconcile with various religions at that time and unite the humanity for the common understanding of spiritual goals. He would say that there are many doors to the God's palace. Either you can enter through the main door, back door, or even utility entrance. But if you try, you will be able to get into God's palace. And he would tell his followers that let's not profess just our alliance to our religion or faith. Let's start practicing it. And when you do that, you will actually understand the actual truth that is the heart of all the religious life. He would say knowledge leads to unity and ignorance to diversity. He would tell his followers, he was very picky about it, and he was very strong about his approach too. To never get in your head that your faith is true and every other is false. I call him a spiritual scientist in many ways. And why? Because he would practice as a Christian. He would dress up as Christian. He would read Bible. He would follow 10 commandments. He would eat as Christians for 6 months, 4 months. He would practice as Muslims. He would pray Allah. He would even dress up as woman. And he would reach the same objectives that he was seeking. He said that in all religions, the subconscious state is identical. Hindus, Christians, Muslims, Buddhists, even the people with or without creed, they all experience the same superconscious level. So all the faith are great. As long as you, rather than preaching, if you practice it, you will reach the same destination. And that's the message that is even resonate today. With what we are doing. Dalai Lama talked about him. He says, Sri Ramakrishna was one of the greatest Indian spiritual adepts of recent time. Here is what Gandhi said about him. So he was a living embodiment of godliness and example of a bright and living faith, which gives solace to humanity around the world. His love to humankind knew no limits. His life was an object lesson in ahimsa, which is a non-violence. And when we are talking about non-violence, he was just not talking about violence against humans. He was talking about violence against planet kingdom, animal kingdom, anything that's living, that's affecting your life. That's what the true meaning of ahimsa is. Joseph Campbell, who was a great writer, orator, and expert in the field of comparative mythology and religions, have written exclusively about Ramakrishna in many of his books. He has visited Ramakrishna mission in India. He understood the philosophy of Vedanta. And every book that I have read, he has mentioned about Ramakrishna in his book. Another author, Lex Hickson, he spent 20 years in Bengal translating the literature, Bengali literature in English, and wrote a great book, A Great Swan, The Life of Ramakrishna. Now, why does he call him a swan? Because swan can separate a milk from water and only drink milk. And just as swan can do it, Sri Ramakrishna also separated impurities of religion, such as superstitions and rituals and cultural habits, and rediscovered truth, not just for himself, for his followers and the world to follow. Obviously, what he did in life was very important, but what he left behind is even more important. And he not just created footprints, but he created a footpath for millions of people to follow. And there is something called Ramakrishna Mission in India. And his mission is to improve the understanding of Vedantic philosophy, also to help poor, improve the condition of women, fight against untouchability, and overhaul the education system to improve social conditions of Indian people. His own master called him an incarnation of God. And why would he do that? Because his master said, what took me 40 years of strenuous practice to get to the stage of, they call it Nirvikalpa Samadhi, which is when you realize absolute oneness with universe. Sri Ramakrishna gained that status within 3 days. So in India, they also celebrate his birthday as a religious festival. And obviously, one of his, he had many disciples, and one of his disciples was a boy named Narendra, who later came to the United States as a Swami Vivekananda. He arrived in the United States in 1893, and in September 1893, he addressed the religions of Parliament. He was the first Swami ever to visit and address religions of Parliament in America. Why is it important? Because at that time, people did not understand Hinduism. They thought the Hinduism means many gods and many deities, but apparently he brought the focus of Vedantic principle and explained what it means to have Advaita philosophy, which is a philosophy of non-duality. And he explained the methods of yoga and meditation and wrote a book of Raja Yoga. He gave in a Thousand Island Park in New York. He stayed for 6 weeks with few of his disciples, and there is a lot of writing on what he has said during those 6 weeks. Just like Ramakrishna, he preached of his vision of religious harmony and united harmony. He was not just a spiritual scholar, but he expounded the actual truth behind Vedanta. Veda is a ancient Indian scriptures, and meaning of Vedanta means end of knowledge. So when you gain all the knowledge by reading and understanding of Vedanta, you feel like you are one with the universe. And that's the state all the spiritual seekers try to attain. He taught meditation practices. He established first Vedanta Society of New York, which is a non-dualistic philosophy of Vedas. Again, he would say that all religions are different forces in the economy of God, working for the good of mankind. They are not contradictory, but they are supplementary. Just like Jesus said, the kingdom of heaven is within you. He would tell his followers that when a man develops high state of spirituality, he can understand the kingdom of heaven is within him. He was not only a great teacher with international message, but he was also a great Indian, a great patriot, and inspired a lot of Indians. He woke up actually sleeping youth of India. So a lot of people credit Gandhi to start the freedom movement, but actually it was Vivekananda who awoke the spirit of India and youth of India to bring forward the changes that Gandhiji was promoting. He was one of the greatest souls. He opened up many, many new paths for later for people to walk on. Later on, we have Yogananda Paramahansa, who came to the United States, established many self-realization institutions. Maharishi also came. Beatles followed them. Many Hollywood personalities followed his message. Currently, we have Swami Chinmayananji, who is also trying to promote and better understanding of Vedantic principles of Hinduism. Even Dr. Deepak Chopra is profoundly influenced by Vedantic principles and principle yoga and trying to educate and create proper understanding of the philosophy of Hinduism. So these are the people I think that played instrumental role in the past, and their legacies are still continuing. And that's one of the reasons we are having these discussions. And I am so happy that today I get this opportunity to talk about these great people.
Thank you for that. That was really an interesting list of people. I wrote some things down here that I see are kind of universal in all our faiths. And I really love the way that you presented the people that their main presence was that. One was the fact of don't just learn about your faith or your religion, but be it, walk it out. Another one was, of course, to stop violence and hatred. That was another one that I heard in this. And then the one to make a path is kind of, I mean, that is a really strong way to say, be, walk it out, live it. And when we create paths of our faith, then that leaves a road for someone else to walk on. And I love that concept.
Correct.
I have a question. I don't understand what a swami is. Could you briefly, because we've gone almost halfway through the show already, could you explain what a swami is?
Well, swami is a religious scholar. There are different criteria given depending on how much of knowledge and how much of expertise and how much of training you have. And not, they're just like in Christianity, there are saints and there are ministers and a priest. So those titles are given after you accomplish certain things. And Swami is a title that's given to somebody who is extremely knowledgeable and who is able to go out and preach and also create better understanding of the philosophies. So I may be just a teacher, but somebody above me and above him would be considered a Swami who has profound knowledge of what they're talking about. And they not only teach about, but they also influence a lot of people and take the faith forward.
Okay, thank you for that explanation. And thank you for the presentation.
Is it okay if I ask a question?
Please.
Just over the last century, you said there was a rediscovery of Hindu philosophy, but maybe a revisiting of Hindu philosophy. And you emphasized that what was taking place up until this point was mainly the external ritual practice of the religion, but the actual philosophy of it had somewhat been lost.
Correct.
And I was curious, in this day and age, and I'm sure it's different everywhere because Hinduism is a worldwide religion, right? How does the study of the philosophy of the religion itself and the practice look? You know, I'm trying to understand, because you were saying that we need to practice the religion. If it's just a philosophy, then how does it flesh itself out and what you actually do in regards to the ritual, the meditation, the practice side of it?
In the past, we have talked about there are a few paths that Hinduism talks about that you can reach the state of enlightenment. For instance, even Vivekananda says that realization may be gained by a practice of yoga of knowledge. So you can read the scriptures and understand your scriptures. The other way is by controlling your mind. That means by meditation, you control your mind. The other path is by selfless service, karma yogi, that's what we call it. And the fourth path, which is a very prominent path, is love of God, faith. So there are different paths of reaching the same objective, and sometimes combination of all, you can reach the same objective. So in the past, obviously every culture's religious ceremonies, which is a profound for understanding of your philosophy, but many times is taken advantage because when you're dealing with the masses of uneducated people and there are only few educated people, it also becomes a source of pride for them, and they really don't expound on the meaning behind the religious ceremonies. And that was happening a lot. And so people were kind of losing focus on what the fundamental truths were. And these are the people who actually talked about the fundamental truth. And there's a saying that, you can destroy all the temples in India, but Hinduism will not be affected a bit because now it is into the philosophical state rather than the ceremonial and ritual state. And that's a profound change.
Okay, but you still practice the ceremonies and rituals, correct?
Absolutely, absolutely, because...
Now, just with the backing of the philosophy, re-inject it back into the practice. So, okay,
absolutely.
I understand. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Yeah, wonderful. She's overview.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, it was very, very interesting. I'm learning so much about every one and their faith. Thank you so much, Ashish. Father Jason, would you mind going next?
Sure, not at all. And I know, you know, Pastor Andy and I are going to overlap a little bit. So I was trying to choose a few people that he may not be as familiar with, but I'll speak for both of us. And, you know, Pastor Andy, you may want to talk about the person that we reference in the Christian faith is obviously Jesus Christ himself, who we understand to be the second person of the Godhead. A lot in the Hindu religion, you almost have a Trinity as well in the theology, the philosophy, which is common in a lot of religions around the world. But for us, the second person, the Holy Trinity, God the Son, took on flesh and entered into this world and revealed the Father to us. So Christianity is really based upon the incarnation, God taking flesh in the person of Jesus Christ, and through his teachings, through his life, through his example, then ultimately through his crucifixion, his burial, and his resurrection from the dead, we are brought back into relationship with God. And that takes on many forms, and it takes on many practical disciplines, from the reading of scripture to learn more about God, to learn more about the theology that we practice, to prayer, fasting, meditation as well. And our hope is that in the Christian tradition, we become so united to Christ himself that we're transformed into his likeness, you know. And I'm simplifying things because I know that Pastor Andy may want to say some things about Christ himself. So for us, he becomes, you know, God incarnate. He becomes the way of salvation. He becomes truth incarnate, and ultimately he becomes the one that conquers death itself. And so we look to him as the cornerstone of the Christian tradition. From him, we have the apostles that were chosen to follow his teachings and to carry his message into the world. There's also 70 apostles that were sent out. I'm named after one of those, Jason or Yasinos. So that's how Christianity spread around the world. And we see that Acts 1:8 and following the book of Acts, which covers the first 30 years of the history of the church. But the ones I was really going to talk about are a few different figures, one being a man named St. Ignatius of Antioch. And St. Ignatius, this is his icon. This is, you can see it. It's kind of dramatic, right? The two lions. He was in Matthew 18. Christ, while he was teaching, took a young child and brought him to himself and used him as an example of kind of what Ashish was talking about, the kingdom of God. You have to enter it with not faith like a child, but not childish faith. You know, one grows and encounters the kingdom of God within them. And that young lad that was, you know, sat on the lap of Christ was, according to our tradition, St. Ignatius of Antioch. And he was discipled by St. John and probably St. Paul as well. He was the third bishop of Antioch. He died in 107. He was captured by the Romans during this period of intense persecution. And he was led from Antioch to Rome, but as he made his way to Rome to be martyred, he wrote letters to various churches, and we still have copies of them. And he's known as an apostolic father. He came right after the apostles. He has direct contact with them. But he wrote letters like the Ephesians, the Philadelphians, the Romans, Smyrnians, others as well. He wrote about the importance of the church structure. And really, this is one of the earliest recollections we have of this or writings about this outside of the New Testament scriptures themselves. But the church is structured according to bishops, priests, and deacons. He also referred to the Eucharist, what we take about our holy meal we share together, as the medicine of immortality. Then ultimately, he was martyred in Rome, again in 107 AD. And this quote kind of summarizes his life that I was looking at a little bit earlier. And he said on his way, "I'm writing to all the churches to let it be known that I will gladly die for God, if only you do not stand in my way. Let me be food for the wild beast, for they are my way to God." So he saw his martyrdom as a way to enter into the glory of God, you know, the full experience of the kingdom of heaven. So he's very important to us, a very early apostolic father, again, direct connection to the apostles themselves, and even in our tradition, a connection to Jesus as well. The other one I was going to talk about, I guess there's two more. I'll try to be quick. I may just mention one more, then we'll go to Pastor Andy. He's probably not known as well, but his name is St. John Climacus. It means St. John of the Ladder. He was a monastic on Mount Sinai, where Moses received the revelation from God. St. Catherine's Monastery is there to this day. The Burning Bush is still there as well, if you ever want to look that up. He spent 40 years in silence, prayer, fasting, and is known for his tears of penitence. He wrote, "Just as fire burns and destroys the wood, so pure tears wash away every impurity, both external and internal." At the age of 75, he became the abbot of St. Catherine's Monastery. And at the request of another abbot in a different area, because he was known for such spiritual insights in his life, he was asked to write a book to monastics on the spiritual life itself. So that's how he got the name St. John Climacus, or St. John the Ladder. He wrote what is the most well-known book in the greater Christian world outside of the Bible itself. It's called The Ladder of Divine Ascent. And so there's 30 steps leading from earth to heaven that represent the 30 years of the life of Christ. And it begins with the renunciation of the world, and it ends with the great virtues of faith, hope, and love at the top of the ladder, and the focus being on love itself. So those are a couple that I would like to talk about, St. Ignatius and St. John Climacus, both different types of followers of Christ, but extremely influential in the life of the Christian church.
Thank you, Father Jason. That was very interesting. And I have a question. I just have to ask this.
Yes.
You said the burning bush was still there. Is it still burning?
No, it isn't burning, but the bush is there. It's there. There's an area built around it. Yeah, you can, if you go to, there's actually an American there named Father Justin, who is the librarian at St. Catherine's Monastery. And I've interacted with him quite a bit over the last few months. But if you go and you look at the website itself for the monastery, you'll see the bush that burned. It's still there. Yeah.
I noticed that when you were talking, there were some things that were also universal themes that I'm hearing in the faiths. And one was when you were talking about Jesus, you said that he had a life of prayer, fasting, and meditation. And I see that they use different words, different faiths use different words for it, but it's the way that we connect with our spirit to the spirit that is what we call God, what other people call different things, but the prayer and fasting and meditation is a part of our tradition to do. And I also realized when you were talking that our goal isn't to be a martyr, but we right. all have that willingness within our heart to live our life in such a way that if martyrdom is part of the cost, we accept that. And so I'm just picking up some things that I kind of see in all of our religions that are very familiar to each other. And I was wondering if anybody noticed any of those things while Father Jason was talking too.
I agree with you, Marcy, because these are all these saints and scholars, they have known the truth. And ultimate truth is the same, that no matter which path or which direction you go in, ultimate destination is the same, and you can reach the same destination as long as you practice what you believe in. But question is not just talking about it, it's practicing it. And when you practice, you reach the same destination. So there's a fundamental truth in what Father Jason just said, what you were just talking about, and what I talked about earlier, that as a human being, we live in this world, but yet we, just like a boat may stay in, you know, may stay in the water, but water cannot stay in the boat. We should be able to live in this world, but world should not live in us. And the only way to do it is by practicing what we were just talking about, meditation, having human nature, you know what I mean? And then it's just mutual respect for each and everybody. And that's the way to live. So.
Pastor Andy, could you talk to us a little bit about the men that was meaningful for you and your faith?
Okay. So I'm born in a country in China, maybe very different with Father Jason and Asha Moody, because you guys are born in a country that there is a religion there, but I was born in China when I was 10 or 15. There is no religion in our country, because at that moment when I was in the primary school, the teacher didn't tell me anything about the religions, because we don't have religions in our country. At that time, we would talk about our hope, our faith, maybe just focus on our country leader, just like Chairman Mao. He is the religion. The man is the religion for us, because we don't have any other religions. We don't have we do have Buddhism, we do have something, but we don't know that at all. We don't have the Christianity. At that time, I don't think we have faith. We only have a hope on a great man, one of our country leaders. That's how I say it. That's how maybe can say that that's our faith, but I don't think that's our faith. Now, that's the first sense I will talk. But after that, I will talk about my faith journey so you can understand what I understand about faith. But when I was in the college, that's the second part of my faith. When I was in the college, our English teacher, the missionaries, the first time I heard about faith is just the Christianity as well. Is that when I look at their lives, they are so different with us. I just shocked. Well, all the human beings, how can we live a different life? Their life have waters, they have purpose, they have love. But our lives only have low hope. We don't know our hope is, our life purpose is. We are living in a disordered environment. We don't know our life's going to be in the future. So I was shocked, why would we have different lives? So I would ask our English teacher, the missionaries, I say, why we have different life? We have different purpose in our lives. So they just introduced the Jesus to me. He said, we're all just like you before, but now we changed. I say, I want to be changed as well. I want to have a new life. And they said, because they just introduced me to Jesus, because we all have sins, because we all live in the same darkness as before. We don't know where is the light, where our purpose in our lives. So I say, I want to know Jesus. So they introduced Jesus to me, to my life. Until one day I know Jesus, and my life was changed. And my calling is to be a pastor. So I think the first man in my face is just my country leaders. My second man in my life face is the missionaries I know, whose name is Mosby. Yeah, he's a ministry in China. And the second man in my life face is just Father Jesus, and that's Jesus Christ. Why know Jesus Christ? Why know Jesus Christ in my life? I knew, how to say, my old life and my new life. He gave me the new life because he was died on the cross, and he raised again in the 3 days and washed away all my sins. So that's the reason I became a new life, not because I'm doing a lot of hard work and I'm doing a lot of great sins, just because of the grace. So that's for free. So that's I accept that. That's my faith come from the grace from God. And I knew from the grace I can live a new life through Jesus Christ. So then now I think the faith is who changed your life, who gave you a new life. The faith is who transformed your life. And the faith is who saved you from the darkness. That's all my faith about. So that's my faith journey, maybe different with your guys, because you have so many knowledge and history about your faith. But I only have a very simple journey of my faith. That's maybe a little different, but I think the faith is all the same, who just can change you and transform you from old person to a new person.
I was just going to say, Pastor Andy, that is a beautiful, beautiful testimony of how that we all want to be able to have a relationship and a faith that is transformative in our lives, that give us peace and give us love and love for one another. And the testimony and the story you just told is beautiful.
You are so welcome. I'm so joyed with talking to you and hear your story as well.
Thank you.
We have just a few minutes left here, and so I would like to take just a few minutes and maybe get some responses from the three of you about some of the things that you heard of the men in the faith walk. Do you have some comments on that? Did you see something that you hadn't seen before?
What I want to talk about was China has 1.4 billion people. And to me, what it seemed like, it was an identity crisis in many ways, because he said China does not have religion. The men in charge of the political figures, they were the religion practically. But if you go back, China has also given great philosophies, Taoism, Confucianism. Yin and yang is what we are concerned about at this time, because it talks about the balance between good forces and bad forces. And if everything remains in balance, we can live our life more purposefully and peacefully. So that's one of the theories that comes from China, yin and yang theory. And I'm quite impressed in a sense that he has found his way and develop a true identity of who he is and purpose of life through Jesus. So I appreciated his honest conversation here.
I echo what Ashi said regarding Pastor Andy's journey and his faith. The other thing, and Ashish, you took some of the words out of my mouth with the yin and the yang, and so I won't go in that direction, but I will say this. What makes it even more difficult in my mind was there may still have been religious expressions in communist China, but they were illegal. So to gather and to worship was something that you could possibly take your own life in your own hands to assemble for your faith. So the religions have been there. It's just, I think it's even more difficult when they're in the situation or in the context of persecution. So it's a heartwarming story, to say the least. And Marcy, I just have a quick question for you.
Yes.
If we have a minute. Who is a person or a male figure, a man in your life that's been influential to you?
Well, I think that probably this is going to be a strange answer, but I think the story of Adam in coming first, there is such a richness that even no matter what year it is brand new for us to really ponder and sit on, and how he actually followed God and how he lost that relationship and what he did. I think that it's there's a lot of stuff in Adam's story, and I appreciate learning and recognizing myself in some of that. So thank you for asking. I have loved today's program. You all gave so much rich stories and experiences, and I can't tell you how much I enjoyed all of you and all of your perspectives and all of your stories. I can't wait to be able to talk again about families and children, which is what our next program is going to be. Thank you again for all of you being here.
Ramakrishna once said that the heavier scale of the balance goes down while the lighter one rises up. Similarly, he who is weighed down with too many cares and anxiety of the world goes down to the world, while he who has less cares rising up towards the kingdom of heaven.
St. John Climacus, in regards to the struggle of the Christian in this world and in this life, said, "Do not be surprised that you fall every day. Do not give up, but stand your ground courageously. And assuredly, the angel who guards you will honor your patience."
Our leader, Chen Bingmao, said, Man will conquer the sky, but Jesus said, "I have come that the man may have life and have it to the full."
You've been listening to About Faith on Red River Radio, and I hope you enjoyed meeting with our panel today as much as I really have. If you have any questions that you would like to ask the panel, or have them address it, please email us at redriverradiomail@gmail.com. That's redriverradiomail@gmail.com. And be sure to tune in next week to Red River Radio at 1 p.m. for Illuminations. And don't forget to tune in 2 weeks for Conversations about many important topics that we will continue to be talking about as we go forward, looking and learning about the people of faith in our community. This is Marcy Howard with lots more questions about faith. So thank you for being with us today.
The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of Red River Radio, our staff or advisory board, or LSU Shreveport. This program copyright 2021.